that you feel uncomfortable about whatever it is that makes you feel awkward. That recognition should make you start questioning what's going on and why is that? And once you analyze that, typically you're going to be able to either notice that it is a program that you're running that you just have to rewrite a little bit so that it has a better outcome.
Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo, and every episode we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Own Your Awkward podcast. We are about to get so awkward. I am pleasured today to have Marcus Vetstein with us today. He is a doctor, an author, a fellow author in a book that we just were part of. Him and Peggy Willems have been putting together compilation books. And the latest is With a Boss War. And if you are not watching and listening, he just held up a copy of it. It's all about using the wellness wheel to live your best life, be healthy, following all things healthy, spiritual, mental, and bring it all together. So, Marcus, right. It is a pleasure to have you here today. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate the opportunity to spread the word of the wellness wheel too, yes. But we're going to talk a little bit more about awkward, I believe, right?
We're gonna find out what makes you so awkward and how it has actually helped you just live an amazing life and be the great person you are. Now, how's things going? What's new? What's exciting in your life you want to share right now?
Well, the most important part, I think, is that I became an author. You know, I mean, that's something that I have never fancied I was going to do. And, you know, through all this, the development of the wellness wheel and all these type of things, I have significantly improved myself. And I think that's the main part that I enjoyed about the ride here recently. Getting to meet people like you who are fantastic people that are really helping forward. Our mission, I think, is to get people to de-stress and enjoy life, be happy, you know? I mean, wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. And so it's really great that this community started developing and I feel less alone because, you know, in the original part of my life there, the first 20 years in Germany, then coming over here, I spent a lot of time by myself, you know? And I thought that, you know, that's just the way it is. And my thoughts with regards to observing the world and looking at what's going on and saying, geez, that's not really exactly how I figured it would be, you know, that should,
right.
but that's the way it is. And I was just taking that into myself. And now I see that there's a lot of other people that are asking the same questions. Why are we doing this stupid stuff out there? You know, politics these days is just like wild. I mean, come on, and we're paying these people? I'm sorry, but you know, that's pretty darn awkward to have to shell out some money for some people to do some BS stuff in the political arena, you know?
Yeah, it's very true. And, you know, I love that you call out how you spent a certain period of your time, like 20 years, feeling alone or spending time alone, but having this completely different set of circumstances now. And the difference being that have found people, you found your tribe.
Exactly.
You know, I feel like when we're in that space of feeling like our thoughts don't line up with the people around us or the world in general, or the things that we're seeing on the news and, you know, it's portrayed as the status quo for mindset, it can be very lonely. And we might have a much better way of thinking that shouldn't be lonely because it's a healthier mindset. Yet we're like, am I the only one that sees this?
Exactly. Yeah, you got it right. That's the way I felt about it. And now the time is right, I think, for everybody to spread the word that, no, you're not alone. You can come out of your shell. You can state what you think should be done. And there's plenty of people that might actually help you forward this. So that's there is going to be a change implemented. You know, right now, everybody is so frustrated. Especially the young folks, you know, I'm remarried right now and I have a 7 and a 15-year-old kid in the household. the 15-year-old and the 21 is out of the house, but they're all depressed. They're all not seeing a future. They're all don't have a drive. You know, they're just going through the motions, and it's so hard to see because we all go through these phases from time to time, and we know how agonizing that feels on the inside. It's really, oh man, you know, you can't move your life forward. You just feel stuck, and it's very depressing. And so having this movement is, I think, the path for a lot of people to be able to see, no, we can make a difference. There are other people that are like me, and together we can create a groundswell here. And I think that's what's happening right now.
Right. I think, well, two things. When, you know, when we don't see the light in the world, that's scary. And I'm going to come back to that in a second, because I have a question for you about the youngsters these days. But one thing that is really inspiring to me is how, you know, we all submit these stories to this book. You know, you and Peggy brought us together and found authors who have stories to share. But it's more than just the words on the page, because every time I've connected with somebody or met somebody that's part of this movement and part of this book and previous book, it's an instant connection, an instant alignment of values, and seeing the light in the world that isn't always being highlighted. And so as we get to know that everyone in the book, it becomes this community where it's like, wow, you have such a different story, such a different perspective. I don't know if we would have, you know, been in the right circumstances to be in the same place to sit down and have a cup of coffee and have this conversation had it not been for us being part of this project together. But we're so connected in the right message that it's inspiring.
It totally is. Yes, yes. And the opportunity arose with Peggy, who is really the driving force behind most of this, developing, you know, approaching me and saying, hey, what do you think about this project? And that was basically the time when things sparked, you know, and I said, well, hey, maybe there is a way out of loneliness, you know, this awkward feeling inside that you're on your own is not a good feeling. It always reminds me of that little, the little story when, you know, you take an ember out of a fire, you know, it goes out, and when you put it back in, it lights back up.
Yeah,
and that's similar to that when you have other people around you that are on the same vibrational force, so to say, you know, then you have this togetherness that creates a significantly different environment, at least for me in my life. You know, it has changed a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Now, the other thing I want to touch on is, you know, you mentioned kids being depressed and dealing with the scariness they see in the world. And I hear that. It's a constant thing that I hear. You know, you look at the rate that children are needing to see therapists has gone up since the pandemic the last couple of years and things like that. So what do you tell a youngster these days to give them some hope that, you know, hey, there is light out there in the world. We have to find it. We have to be the light to get through those dark times. Because as you said, we've all struggled with that to some degree over the years of our lives, whether it's been from events in the last few years or personal events in our own lives as we've grown.
Yep. Well, you know, it is basically contained in the All Things Wellness series as you are responsible. You are responsible for what's going to happen in your life. And if you don't take that responsibility, then somebody else will make decisions for you. You will just be a slave. That's basically what's going to happen in this society. So either you muster that drive or you don't. And most people don't, and they are living a life of slavedom, unfortunately. And they will never feel satisfied or happy to the point that they could if they would have that ability to take that first step and start moving instead of just staying in one place and winding up feeling secure but completely unhappy.
Yeah, well, it's funny. It reminds me with my coaching clients, a lot of them look at me surprised when I kind of blow them off a little bit when they talk about like, well, I don't feel like doing this. I was like, oh, that's okay. You don't have to. And they're like, I said, well, you don't have to do that, but you won't have these things that you're saying you want if you don't do these things. So it's up to you. And the first thing you have to do is admit, what kind of life do you really want? And if, you know, stop trying to convince yourself that you want these things over here if you're not willing to do what it takes to get there. And I'm not going to sit here and scream in your face and say, this is the life you should live. Because that, you know, whatever life we're seeing on TV isn't for everybody. You don't have to go to the gym at 5 a.m. every morning. You don't have to, you know, be doing all these things. People paint as the perfect life, because that's not the perfect life for everybody. But you have to be honest with yourself. And like you said, if you decide what you want and you really, truly want that, you are responsible to get it.
Exactly. So I tell, again, the 15-year-old, you are responsible. High school is a stepping stone. You should not go and be, you know, a passive aggressive and come late to school and, you know, all kinds of stuff that kids pull these days to get the hooky done. And just use it as a method of realizing that all the other kids are doing that. That's why you're doing it, because you just run out of program. Think about it. Look at this as a stepping stone. And all the grief that you get from everybody else in the environment doesn't really matter in 5 years. What matters in 5 years is how you performed in school and what kind of doors that opens to you in the future. That's the way the system is set up, and that's the pain point. And if you can't muster that pain point and get over it, then you're going to be stuck. Yes, sorry. But, you know, that drive to pull forward and say, well, you know, high school, in 5 years, I'm going to laugh about the fact that my teacher ridiculed me in front of the class and stuff like that. You know, these are the moments where kids just go passive aggressive, right, in school, and they just don't want to do anything anymore. And it's just their rubber stamp response. And it's so silly, honestly, to do that.
And it's what they see around them, and it's the stories they hear, and the things they see on the, you know, the classic movies about how you act in high school. And also it's like, well, that's how my life should be, like a teenager.
Yeah. And very true.
Not, I must be in this category, or this must be what I'm supposed to do.
Right. Yep. Yep. That's a rough one. But hey, we all have to go through that, and our decisions determine our life. So, you know, and nobody else can change that. If you are not ready to make that move, then you're going to be stuck. Like I said. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And there's a balance to, you know, not blaming yourself for every situation and understanding that there are situations that are outside of our control that we end up in.
Mm-hmm.
Also taking the responsibility for the next step, being able to say, okay, someone just rear-ended my car. Where do I go from, you know, or whatever just happened, a rainstorm came in and that ruined the day I had planned. So do I sit on the couch and do nothing, or do I jump in the puddles?
Let's go to the accident portion again. You know, if somebody rear ends you, then, oh, it's all their fault. And you jump out of the car and you be aggressive and you yell at people, you know, for doing that and stuff like that. Maybe a change of your attitude will change the whole situation a little bit, you know, so that you don't wind up having hypertension for the rest of the day,
right?
You know, and wind up with problems in the future for your health because you got so anxious and uptight about stuff. If somebody hits you in the back, there's probably a good reason for it. Let's say, you know, hey, now you're stuck at that place. If you would have kept moving, maybe a semi would have T-boned you. You know?
Yeah, maybe.
So the point here is you got to look at this from the perspective of, hey, you know, this happened, maybe for a good reason.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that type of attitude makes it a little bit easier to get through those type of situations.
that's the thing, is you look at it and you say, well, something worse could have happened, and at least at least I'm standing up, at least I'm walking, at least I'm breathing. I'm a big believer in practicing gratitude, but I think sometimes people try to find the biggest thing they can be grateful for. And I think the thing we need to do is find the very smallest thing we can be grateful for. Like, I'm grateful for the fact that I can turn on my tap and clean water comes out that I can drink. I'm grateful for the fact that I can breathe the air without it being so polluted right now where I live that I can just walk out and have fresh air, or have a clean shirt to put on. Like, when you really look at what's the smallest, most basic thing I can be grateful for, all of a sudden you feel spoiled. It's like, oh my gosh, I get to eat a warm meal.
I get to buy
a meal at a restaurant that someone else cooks. Like these are really great things that are amazing that we overlook because we're like, well, I want to be grateful, but I don't have the boat or I don't have this. And it kind of does the opposite effect if you're looking for the big stuff.
Needs and wants are one of those things, right? Yeah.
Right.
The thing is that these days, the need for stuff is relatively small in comparison to the wants that we have. And the wants are sometimes even pushed into us, you know? I mean, targeted advertisement these days knows exactly what you like. They present you with things that you didn't even know that existed. Now you can't do without them.
Funny how that works, right? All of a sudden it's like, I have to have this thing. And instead of saying I want it or I'd like to have it, it's I need this. How am I going to get from point A to point B without that thing that I just heard about yesterday?
Yeah, and that's the difference. You know, we sell it to ourselves as a need, but it really isn't. You know, it's just excess. It's excess that actually enslaves us. I was writing a little article or note about that with regards to people. They get these synthesized needs that weren't there before that are pushed into us from other sources. Then you don't have the money. You get your credit card out. Now you have to work to pay back that credit. So your work ain't fun anymore.
Yeah.
You do this for a different purpose than fun. And if you spend 8 hours a day at work doing stuff that's not fun for you, it's another one of those things that pulls you down over the time, you know?
Yeah.
It just does. And so it's kind of sad how this whole system is basically geared to enslave you.
Yeah, I heard an article, and this was about 20 years ago, and it was talking about, at the time, it was saying, you know, how much money does a person need to be making to be considered, you know, doing well in life? Not necessarily wealthy or rich, but just doing well. And they said that in the 1970s or 60s or 70s, if you were making $1,000 for every year of your age, so if you were 40,000, if you were 40 years old and you were making $40,000 a year, you were doing pretty well in 1970.
In the 70s, I can see that.
But one of the things, and this article was probably in the 90s when I read, this was a while back, so the numbers definitely don't necessarily work now necessarily. But one of the things that they mentioned was that the biggest difference between that time period and when this article came out was that you probably didn't need to make that much more than what it seems like you needed to make, because the difference that happened was the amount of things that people were expected to buy to have a home. It wasn't expected that you would have a microwave, more than one TV in your house, a computer, two cars per household, things like that. That, you know, the basic what
cat
was
cat and dog
to set up a house was less. And so all we added was all these extra things that made us need more money to have all the things for the life that's expected to be a quote unquote normal life.
Right.
And every once in a while, I think about that when I'm like, okay, what am I doing that's making me poorer by thinking I need more stuff? Like having the opposite effect.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, you know, and again, it doesn't buy you happiness. So, you know, there is a minimum required amount, and they've done studies trying to see who's happier, you know, if you the income level, and there was an income level after which there was no further improvement in your happiness.
Yeah.
You know, so that's basically the general gist of the idea that, you know, if you really go for what's important, which is a positive feeling on the inside and a good life, because we only got one shot at this, okay?
Darn it.
as long as you go for that, you know, then you will exit this realm much, much more prepared for what's coming next, you know? Because at this point in time, I believe this is just a a training ground for us to see, can we handle the responsibility of the next level of existence? That's me and my personal opinion about all that, but you know.
So we're in junior high right now, or high school, the graduation.
Oh man.
But I think that's a healthy way to look at it, because if you can see, you know, death and the end of life as a graduation, a promotion, a moving on to something that's the next thing, it makes it a lot less scary.
And I tell you, and a lot of people are so anxious about death and dying. And the problem is because they see that as the final end point, you know. If you understand where we're coming from, if there truly is a God, then we will reunite afterwards. And that is a beautiful thing that needs to be celebrated. It's the people that I see in my professional job that wind up regretting stuff at the end of life, you know, that are having a terrible time exiting. And that is, you know, sad to see. So one of the missions here is to try and make people understand that death is not the end all. If you're thinking that way, you're just pulling yourself down onto a lower level of energetic existence. You need to connect, like I said earlier, with the fire. You know, the fire is provided to us. We are the ember. You know, we have to understand that this is one whole system. We belong to it. And just because we're in this existence at this time doesn't mean that there's not something else out there.
Yeah.
You know, and we're exploring that right now. It's a fantastic time to live, honestly, because I mean, you know, all the subtle energies and all that stuff and quantum stuff. I mean, me as a scientist, I'm just like, let's go.
Right. Let's find out some more data and see what else we can add into the information.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, you know, now they're saying maybe there's no Big Bang after all, you know, that type of stuff. Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at all these literatures and all these developments, you know, they're seeing that, you know, black holes just disappear. That type of stuff is just like, what?
Where'd it go?
Yeah, exactly, you know?
Oh, wow.
So there's a heck of a lot more out there than we think we have an understanding of. And having the humbleness to appreciate the fact that this is all provided to us. Be grateful, be happy. You're going to enjoy your life. You're going exactly the route that was sort of like outlined for you. If you veer off, you're not going to have that much of a fun time. You're still going to live your life, but hey, why not try and tap into this path that is a little bit more ideal and a whole lot more fun?
Right. I think that's neat. You're talking about the developments in what we're learning, because you could take any subject over, you know, centuries and go, you know, 50 years ago, even 10 years ago, we thought we knew everything about this, but look at all the things learned. And 10 years before that, we thought we knew everything about this, and they have continued to evolve, especially with science. And you look at things as like DNA, how much that's developed over the last few decades, where they didn't even use it in courts or as definite for things.
That's right. But you know, one big example that I outlined in the first book there was the genetic determinism that we grew up with. When I was in high school, everything was about the genetics. You were given that and you're running a program because that's your program, and you can't veer off of that. That's it, you know. And that type of stuff, well, it was pretty depressing at the time.
Right.
And now we know it's completely wrong. Everything is much more fluent and flexible, and epigenetics have a huge impact and so on. And all of this just topples all the science that we thought we had all control over, and we knew everything, you know. And then Mother Nature just, you know, you heard the joke, you know, there's a little get together, you know, all the and Mother Nature is out there partying with all the other guys, and somebody says something about and then they think that they can influence the whatever the economy. No, let's say the nature. Yes, we have control of nature. And so Mother Nature goes, oh, just hold my beer for a minute. And we can see that, you know, nature lashes out at us. We're starting to get purged off this planet right now because we're just messing it up. You know?
Yeah, it's just
unfortunately
cannot be controlled. Yeah. Well, we could go down this conversation for hours because you're such a pleasure to talk to and so insightful. And I have so many things to ask and talk about on what we've already opened up that this is fun. However, we got to get awkward, and the world is going to want to know about your awkward and what makes you so awkward and how you've owned it.
Well, the most awkward right now is this, right? Probably a few of your viewers have noticed that. It's pretty awkward to run around with a missing tooth in your face, but I'm using that in the beginning. Well, let's circle back and say over in Germany, everything is prim and proper, right? I mean, if you have a ding in your car, you better fix it. Otherwise, all your neighbors are going to be up in arms about that. You know?
Oh, wow.
So having a missing tooth is just not an option. And so, you know, I have a brother and a sister still over there. And, you know, we talk about these things, and I'm just not there anymore. I don't want to do the prim and proper. I do me. And when I do me and I feel happy, whatever you think, if you don't like the way I look, then just don't look at me. You know? It's okay.
Right.
I've been through that for decades. So nobody looking at me. So, you know, there's no problem.
Yeah.
That's the point there. Other awkward always comes up because of the change from Germany to the United States when I was 20 years old. That created a lot of awkward moments coming to America. You know, little things like, you know, your styrofoam cup with crushed ice in it, and you take the last sip and the avalanche gets you all the way into your lap. If you don't get up quickly, you're going to wind up with a soaker butt and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So those are the little awkward moments when you do a complete culture change, you know, mm-hmm. because you don't know any of these things. And, you know, crushed ice in drinks just doesn't happen over there. So that's the there's a lot of stories, and the little ice story is a small one, but you know, the fact that people point out that I still have an accent after 30 years, you know,
right?
Those several things, you know, they're kind of awkward a little bit. I thought I was just part of, you know, America now, you know, but no, right. There's always giveaways, you know. Eh, you know, I'm not really. Well, that's pretty awkward.
It's interesting because you can live in a place long enough that all of your memories or your recent memories are, this is home and this is where I'm at.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm an American citizen, not a dual citizen. So, you know, I left all that behind. It's just the point is the transition. If you don't grow up in a place, you're always behind. You know, it's amazing how much you learn as a kid. Because all these things, all the way through high school, I missed, right? And so the amount of stuff that gets put into your brain during that time is tremendous. And you live like that. It's in your subconscious, you know, it's programs, basically, that you live. And programs over in Germany are, in some respects, different than over here. And so if you run that program, everybody looks at you over here and says, oh, what's wrong with you guys, you know?
Right.
So that's the awkward part of, you know, having that type of a history. But I would never regret a moment of it, I tell you that.
Well, so you know, you started out mentioning how over there things are so prim and proper, and you're kind of done with that and just, hey, this is me. Was that part of your desire to come to America? Was there feeling out of place in that culture, or was there?
To a degree back then, the biggest drive was, you know, family topics that were just, you know, I had to leave.
Okay, that's fair.
It's basically what it was, more than anything. Yeah.
Yeah, because especially at, you know, I look back on myself at 20, and I know that that's a hard age to be that in tune with. Just I'm me, and I know there are youngsters who are like that, but that mm-hmm, develop that security.
Oh yeah, Back then, I was the prim and proper guy. Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh, this lasted into my career as well. I mean, I was the head of the Department of Endocrinology and all that good stuff, with suit and tie, going to work all the time. So yeah, no, this lasted a long time. This was imprinted and a hard program. There's soft programs that you can deal with quickly, and there's hard programs that are very difficult to work on. But the way to realize that you have to work on it is if you notice, if you actually stop and notice and pay attention and realize that ain't making me happy, having to go to with suit and tie to work, that's not me. I'm sorry, but I didn't know that back then. It just developed over the years. You just go along,
Yeah, and the thing with those hard programming situations is they're in there and they are so hardwired that you're oblivious to how it's affecting you and that there could be another way. We don't think about it as a software we could upgrade or download. It's just, nope, this is the way I'm built. And then one day, wait, does it have to be that way?
Exactly. The rewiring, the mirror neurons, all these type of things that we have found that give us a good basis of saying, no, you're not stuck. That's your own decision to be stuck. You're not destined to have breast cancer because everybody else in the family had it. It's one of those things that you have an influence over. You do,
I've had a similar conversation with a few of my friends now that we're, in that age where we're getting to that middle age where you start to run into things, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, my parents ran into this issue at this age, and my parent had a heart attack or a stroke at this age or started having high blood pressure, and everyone's starting to kind of, go, okay, now I've got to be super diligent about these things. But there's an awareness level, and there's also, but what do we have control over so that we don't become that person?
Well, to put it again, like we said before, this is not just genetic determinism anymore. There is epigenetics. That's the point here. Yes, you might have that gene, but do you need to express that? Do you need to bring that out? Yeah, if you're all upset about it and your mind is thinking 24/7, oh, I'm going to have breast cancer, guess what?
It is amazing. The mind is a very powerful thing.
Tremendous, tremendous.
I didn't used to do this or be aware of the power of how I thought. And I considered myself a positive person, but I also feel like I have this negative, like yin and yang, where I can default sometimes to the negative. And there's days now where I'm able to say, you know what, I'm just not thinking right, and I need to focus instead of trying to solve the problem. It's like, no, I need to get my mental space into the right vibration or the right mindset.
Turning inward.
I'm just saying, okay, I just need to spend some time getting in a positive mindset and then go deal with the issues of the day.
And they're running so much smoother. Unbelievable. It is crazy. I mean, I've seen that so many times. It's never fun to be on call as a physician, right? Because you never know when that call comes in. Over the years, I've done an experiment on myself, trying to figure out if I'm in this mindset, and it's negative, I get a heck of a lot more phone calls than if I'm in a positive mindset.
Interesting.
Is that, yeah, and that is something that, is my personal observation and obviously not something that is generally applicable, but another point for me to be convinced to work on positivity and wind up having a better life as a result of that. It was very easy once I detected that, but you have to spend the time to look at.
And it's also something that seemingly is outside of your control, how many calls you're getting. And anyone could say, I have no control over how many calls I'm getting, and look at how many are coming in. Yet, if you're just looking at it from a positive light, that can change the whole situation.
And that's one of these things that everybody would tell you, oh, that's impossible. You're full of it, but that is the realm we are entering now. This is the new deal. We are going into a mind space that is completely unexplored, that is going to liberate us. And there's a lot of people that don't want that. they want slaves out there, okay?
Yeah.
So there's going to be some problems getting all people to get to move towards personal freedom, is what I call it, you know, happiness, yeah. Personal freedom. And so there's powers to be that don't want that, obviously. So you have to be prepared for that as well. You know, other people that see you improving your quality of life and giving you a hard time about it, you know, those type of things. It just tells you that, yeah, sometimes you have to change your friends, your circle of, and things all of a sudden loosen up, you know.
Yeah.
Constructive criticism is only appreciated when it's invited. Too many people, you know, solicit an opinion without being invited to do so, and that's automatically unnecessary, because that person that you're attacking that way is probably knowing that already, and will have a response according to how serious that problem is that they have on the inside, that they know they have already, and then they blow up, right, at other people. Because they know this is in here, and this guy just pointed it out, you know, and there comes this one, right?
Yeah, and then it becomes, well, what about all the things that are wrong with you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, that's just pulling everybody down.
Exactly.
So, yes, with the interactions, and like you mentioned before, with the groups, this group here is just fantastic because everybody is helpful and positive. And lifting each other up. That's what we need more. That's what we need more.
When you did this experiment where you're looking at your mindset when you're on call, negative versus positive, have you found a way to shift your mindset to the positive? Like, are there tips or tricks you can give people, say, hey, get out of the funk, get over to this space?
Well, in that particular case, it was because the amount of calls went down, that was a positive reinforcer to the max. Okay. And so every time I start noticing that I have this internal thing, I say, I got a full 24 hours on call still. Let's change this a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so that was a in that instance, a particular thing. But there are so many things that people will figure out themselves where they have hangups. And where they feel awkward, and where really a positive attitude towards it will melt all that away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, one
thing,
don't
need to feel awkward.
Sometimes I like to focus on the negative because it feels like you can really get in on it. So I'm going to bring up this concept of being stuck as a slave, because that's, you've mentioned that a few times, but you know, it's the easy thing to do, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if you the thing is, if you are a slave versus a creator, let's say, okay, if you're a slave, you're in a position where you don't have to do anything. You just follow orders, and that's your input into society. And as long as you do that, everybody is happy except for you. If you push yourself to creation, then you're the one who is developing their own self, able to reflect that towards the outside, hopefully getting other people to notice that positive vibration and getting a whole new attitude on life.
And I think that one thing we tend to be afraid of is taking responsibility, because if you move out of that mindset, you're now responsible. And if you don't make the right choice, or if you don't do something, or you do something and who knows, right or wrong, if it's the right choice, it just doesn't go as well as you want, you have to be responsible for the outcome, to clean it up, to take it the next step. And I feel like too often, and I've done this in the past, where it's like you try something, it doesn't go the way you want, and you're like, see, that's proof that I shouldn't step out of my comfort zone, and you go back to where you were, rather than saying, well, that didn't go the way I wanted, let's try the next thing, let's re-strategize, keep going. But that's scary, okay, because now you're the one responsible. Now you're the one people are looking at. But isn't that what
right. But yeah, the point there is that if you are the responsible party, and then you got to the point where you understand these principles. And when you understand these principles, you know that, yeah, we all make bad decisions. And what we do is we learn from them. You know, we don't beat ourselves up over it. You know, we just learn and hopefully do better the next time. And that's what this is all about. So the fear of failure is something that is imprinted in us also, right? There's another program. We have to be the winners all the time, you know? And so you don't want to go where you have to make a decision that might be turning into a failure.
Right.
Right? So this is actually placed into you. It's not your program. It's something that is put in there, okay, and you're just running it all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
and so you got to get away from that.
Yeah. And what's interesting, I polled my audience a couple years back because I was sitting here, you know, juggling with some thoughts in my head. And I just asked everybody, are you more afraid of success or failure? And the reactions were mixed and actually leaned a little bit more towards people being success. It was like 52 to 48% people were more afraid of success. But the reason they were afraid of success was because the more successful they are, the more they're setting themselves up for a bigger failure. So even though they're saying they're afraid of success, it's really the failure that they're still afraid of.
It's a nasty program, isn't it?
I mean,
it's very powerful in there. It is very powerful. Yes, wow. Yes. But it's trying to keep you where you are instead of moving forward and being the decision maker. Yes.
So how have people reacted since you said, you know what, I'm going to own my awkward. I'm going to be myself. I'm not going to care about the missing tooth in my face. I'm not going to care about being as prim and proper. How has that changed your interactions with people and your community?
Well, let me tell you, at work, I'm still trying to be professional and I'm still using my little, you know, appliance there, because, you know, you have to uphold a certain whatever. Fair. You know what I'm talking about. So, but otherwise, you know, so I play the social game with that, and I'm sensitive to these things. So I know when I can let myself go and when I have to play the game, right? And we all have to learn that. and so I do according to how it feels. If I feel uncomfortable with this going into seeing it, then my next patient, I'll pop that appliance in. This is probably somebody who would otherwise keep staring at my mouth instead of listening to what I have to say.
Right.
Right. So it is really flexible enough for me to function in society also. I'm not just a quitter and
well,
screw everybody type of thing, you know.
I think there's something important there in that you have to meet people at their comfort level also, because everyone is on a different space in how well they have accepted themselves and are willing to accept someone who is that comfortable in their own to where you engage. Like, are they going to look at me like I'm way too much if I'm just like, oh, I don't care about anything, here I am. And now they're losing what's really important in this message you need to give them for their health.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. And that's, you know, as a physician, it's important for me in my job to clue in on this quick enough. And now these days I'm not just looking at charts and all the data. I am putting the feeling into it, and that makes a huge difference with regards to connecting to the patient and then doing what's best for them, because you kind of have to sell something, how to go about things, right? So for instance, one of the big things is diabetes. You know, if I tell people, well, you know, unfortunately, at this point in time, we have to get your sugar under control, so you need to start some insulin, right? That's a recommendation that, you know, they can follow or not, but I'm trying to make a big point that would be, at this point in time, a necessity, and then outline how we can go and make them better and hopefully get them off insulin again.
Right? Yeah.
So it is one of those things where, I just can't make the loop anymore. Sorry. Your turn.
Okay. Well, the one thing that I wanted to also find out is, you mentioned early on how you had this time period where you didn't have a community and now you do. How does someone develop that community? It's, you know, because it's not an overnight thing necessarily where you can say, hey, I'm here, people. This is me. who are my people and people show up, or is there a way to do that? Because there are people out there who don't feel like they have the community right now.
Right. I think, you know, my path was the development of, you know, things like Zoom and all the internet gives you information. The first thing you have to do is, what are your interests? What are you having fun with? You know, poke around. I mean, the world is your oyster. Okay, go for it. Find out what really sparks you. And once you found that, you try and look for a community that works in that field. And that's very easy these days. Right. I would almost guarantee that everybody should be finding a community out there for their particular interests and forward their happiness that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point, because there's always this back and forth between online community versus in-person community and what's better, but they can complement each other very well. And the access to the internet can actually help you develop an in-person community. Marcus, this has been so insightful. Before we wrap up, I do want to find out, what's the best way for people to support you, follow you online, give you all the love, and really support what you're doing?
Yeah, so my general email is MWETTST, so Marcus Wettstein sort of thing, abbreviated, and then at gmail.com. And the other way is through allthingswellness.com. That would be going to Peggy's website, you know, because she has a huge structure there. Through her, people can get in contact with me. I'm on Facebook. I wouldn't know how to, you know, Marcus Wettstein, MD, I guess. And that's basically it. Yeah, I'm still not too savvy with all of this.
there's a lot of moving parts in the online world, right?
And yeah.
It's a
and problem. Man, does it take time, you know? You can really get lost in there. And I, you know, this is a relatively new marriage for me, so I spend time with my family, and then I have to sit there at night and try and catch up and stuff like that. And, you know, I get yelled at for not opening up stuff, and
No, I'm the same way, where like online interactions, I can be fully engaged right there in the moment and then step away because I'm on a hike or I'm doing something or with family or friends. And I'm not going to worry about keeping up on that. But then it's like, oh, now I got this pile of stuff from a day or two to go on.
That's right. Unbelievable.
I appreciate it.
So we muddle through.
Exactly. Now, before we go, you've given us so much good stuff. So I hate to even ask for more, but what would be a simple advice, something you would leave the audience with on how they could own their awkward in the days coming forward?
Well, the first thing is to realize that you feel uncomfortable about whatever it is that makes you feel awkward. That recognition should make you start questioning what's going on. And why is that? And once you analyze that, typically you're going to be able to either notice that it is a program that you're running that you just have to rewrite a little bit so that it has a better outcome, or you just replace it completely. Once you know that you have an awkward program inside of you, it will remain there and suck your energy unless you deal with it and make it go away. And how do you make it go away? By realizing that, hey, we are all our own person. We go this route once, and everything else around us is extra. It's, you know, it's something that, you know, we have to enjoy. A friend of mine in the olden days told me, you know, we're born naked and we leave naked, and everything else is extra. So once you have that feel of gratitude, awkwardness is, you know, something, yeah, we have to continuously work on. Otherwise, it will just draw too much away from us energy-wise.
Yeah, we can't afford to give up the energy. That is for sure. We need it for all the stuff we got to get through and all the good we want to do.
Oh, yeah. That's it.
Got to preserve it and direct it the right way. Well, Marcus Wettstein, this has been awesome. I feel like we could just do this all day long. There's so much good knowledge I want to tap into with your experience, your background, and everything you're doing. But
Well, we can run that in the background, no problem. You know, a little email here and there and stuff like that. That would be fun.
For sure.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed it too, you know. It's always amazing to me how much fun that actually could be. In the beginning of all of this, Peggy can tell you, I was so anxious, I couldn't even, without a script, I couldn't even sit in front of the camera, you know. That's how bad it was.
It takes some getting used to and a certain level of comfort of just like, no, I just got to be myself. And my early videos, I remember my kids and some people telling me, just why are you, it feels so rehearsed. Why, you just got to be yourself. And I'm like, but I'm on camera. I have to be this way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think everybody goes through that, you know? And that's the awkward moments that just dissipate. So I take this as an example for how you can liberate yourself from all of this. Just persist. You have to have that push, that energy to keep moving in that direction. And if you do, all the awkwardness and the bad stuff will fall away, you know?
I love it. That's the life to live right there. Well,
Exactly.
Marcus, thank you so very much. It's been a pleasure today. Really appreciate the time.
And thank you, Andy. Yes, I appreciate it.
And everybody else, go out there, follow Marcus, check out the book, Win the Wellness War, read his story, give him some love online, and of course, own your awkward.
You got it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.